Okay. 12 stones, a red thread, and a torturous trek. So what we're going to do is we're going to explore a little bit the beginning of Sefer Yehoshua. And in the process of exploring the beginning of Sefer Yehoshua, going to try to uncover one of the most important challenges that Yehoshua faces, and then to see what he does with that. The first parak of Sefer Yehoshua, we're not going to look at right now. The first parak of Sefer Yehoshua basically presents a very personal challenge for Yehoshua. Moshe's name appears more than Yehoshua's does. And that highlights the great challenge. There are source sheets around, if anybody wants. Did you get? There's a stack of them over here. Thank you. That highlights a very personal challenge that Yehoshua has, and that is, how is Yehoshua going to replace Moshe? How is he going to step into Moshe's shoes? Moshe was the only leader that the Jewish people knew for 40 years. There were people who were born under the leadership of Moshe and who grew up under the leadership of Moshe. Almost everybody alive then knew nothing other than Moshe's leadership. And I imagine that for them and for Yehoshua himself, it was inconceivable that anybody else could fill those shoes. And indeed, those were shoes that were absolutely impossible to fill. Especially when you consider what the Torah writes at the end of Sefer Devarim, "V'lo kam b'Yisrael naviot k'moshe," right? That Moshe was unparalleled. So how does anybody take over? You can't follow that act. And the beginning of Sefer Yehoshua really identifies for us that Yehoshua is not supposed to follow Moshe's act. Yehoshua is not supposed to be another Moshe. Yehoshua is supposed to be Yehoshua. He has a different job. Moshe's job was Navi. Yehoshua's primary job was to be a military leader to conquer Eretz Yisrael. To conquer and settle Bnei Yisrael into Eretz Yisrael. That was his job. That's a job that Moshe couldn't do. Moshe never was in a warrior kind of position. That's a job that Yehoshua sort of got his training immediately after Yitziat Mitzrayim in the battle with Amalek. He's the one who leads the battle down here while Moshe is busy up in Shemaim. So that's the opening parak of Sefer Yehoshua. It deals with that personal challenge that Yehoshua faces, and then the challenge of how the people are going to accept him, and that emerges from a conversation that he has with Reuven and God and Chatzi Shevet Menashe. And you see there the question of loyalty, and they set a very, very high bar. But immediately after that, we have a series of stories here in the beginning of Sefer Yehoshua that, on their own, each one of them is an interesting story. Some more interesting than others, but there is a powerful thread, pun intended, there's a powerful thread that ties them all together. The first story is the story of sending Meraglim. That doesn't sound very good. You would think that of all people, Yehoshua would know the dangers of that. Maybe he thought he could do it better. He was one of them. And it turns out he does it differently. Okay, first of all, he sends 2, not 12. He sends people who are anonymous. They have no names. Moshe sends, those guys weren't Meraglim. They were a political delegation. One from each Shevet. Right, it was a very strange way to send spies. And he sends them to Yericho to check out the city, to find out what happens there. When they get there, the second parak of Sefer Yehoshua describes what I could only describe as a parody on a good spy film. You get these two guys who come into a city, you know, and you can imagine the scene. They come into the gates, and where do they go? They go to hang out in the local sleaze joint. Right? You can imagine the kind of lowlifes that are hanging out in this place. It's a house of a prostitute, right? On the outskirts of the city. She lives literally in the wall of the city, where probably nobody would choose to live, right? It's the first place that gets attacked when somebody comes there. You know, all the arrows that miss end up in your bedroom. Not a great place. And you see the scene. They're sort of sitting there, you know, ordering a beer, you know, with a smoky, you know, and dimly lit, and you know, whispering to each other and checking out what's going on and listening in, and they get caught on their first night in town. Like, they're spies and they're really bad at it. First of all, they get caught by the prostitute. Second of all, they get caught by the king. He hears about them on their first night in town. This is the parody on a spy film. And they end up hiding in the hay on the roof. And then they get out by climbing out the window. Right? They climb out the window and she says, run in the opposite direction. They're looking for you over there. Go up there, wait in the mountains for 3 days until they stop the search parties. Then you guys go home. And when they come home, they're supposed to report on the fortifications of the city. And they can't tell them, they can't say a single word. So the whole story is a parody on the notion of spies. And yet, within that parody, there are some really interesting things that come up. Okay, if you take a look at the source pages, I feel bad that I actually printed an extra page for no reason. That's just a waste of paper. So on your source pages, we have a few select quotes from Sefer Yehoshua and parallels to those quotes from other places in Chumash. And I see that something got messed up over here in the Hebrew, so we'll do the best that we can. I sent this as a PDF, and that's not supposed to happen when, you know, in a PDF, but it happened anyway. Vayishlach Yehoshua bin Nun Menashitim, Shnayim Anashim Raglim. Okay? And parallel to that, we have, of course, the story of Shlach Lecha Anashim, the story of the Meraglim. But now, let's go a little bit deeper. Okay? Go to the second section on the right-hand side. And these are the comments of Rachav. Rachav, the prostitute from Yericho. I know when I was a kid, we learned this. They said she was a baker. Hostess, okay. Yeah. Vatomer el ha'anashim. So she identified them immediately. She picked them out of the crowd. Vatomer el ha'anashim. He tells these two guys, Yadati ki natan Hashem lachem et ha'aretz, v'chi nafla ematchem aleinu, v'chi namogu kol yoshevei ha'aretz mipnechem. Literally translated as, I know that Hashem has given you this land, and that your fear has fallen upon us, and that everybody here is melting before you. Those are the words that she uses. Now, those are words that are quite encouraging. But truth is, they're more than encouraging, because those words ring a bell in the eyes of every Jew who davens daily. What is Hashem, the parallel to that? Heveti etchem al haaretz. This is what Hashem says to Moshe to tell Bnei Yisrael in the beginning of Parashat Va'era, I will bring you to the land. Right? אשר נשאתי את ידי לתת אותה לאברהם, ליצחק וליעקב, ונתתי אותה לכם. Okay, that's כי נתן השם לכם את הארץ, ונתתי, right? Hashem promised, and Rahab is saying, I know that the promise that Hashem gave you is about to come true. She's very frum. She's quoting from Sefer Shemot. But not only is she quoting from Sefer Shemot, look at the next piece, because when you hear the language, Nafla ematchem aleinu v'chi namogu kol yoshvei ha'aretz mipneichem. Nafla ematchem tipol aleihem emata v'fachad. Nafla ematchem tipol aleihem emata v'fachad. I see things got messed up over here, even worse than I thought. There are things that got cut off. Namogu kol yoshvei ha'aretz. Namogu kol yoshvei kanan. She is quoting from Shirat Hayam. That's unbelievable. Rahav, the prostitute from Yericho, is quoting from Shirat Hayam. And she does it more than that, because she continues. She describes, Ki shamanu et asher hovish Hashem et mei yamsuf mipnichem. We heard that God dried up the waters of Yam Suf, b'tzeitchem Mitzrayim, as you left Mitzrayim, v'asher asitem l'shnei malchei ha'emori asher be'eva ha'yardein. We also heard what you did to Sichon and Og on the eastern banks of the Jordan, l'sichon u'l'og asher ha'ram temotam. So if we just take a look at this first line, we'll come back to the rest of it afterwards, right? Hasher ovish Hashem et mei Yam Suf, v'nei Yisrael ha'chu batoch hayam ba'yabasha. Yabasha, hovish, same word. Okay? Continues, right? Down to the next section. Vanishma vayimas levavenu. Right, our hearts melted. Velo kama od ruach beish mipnechem. Ki Hashem elokechem hu elokim b'shamayim imal. Ve'al haaretz mitachat. So we know that Hashem is the elokim b'shamayim imal. And Shirat Hayam, Hashem yimlochi olam va'ed. She's quoting from Shirat Hayam. It's unbelievable. So we have over here a perek that evokes for us something from Yitziat Mitzrayim. Okay? Rahav says we remember Yitziat Mitzrayim. And we remember the language that you guys created coming out of Mitzrayim. So, wow. You know? Let's go a step further. So she says, so, you know, I know that Hashem is going to help you conquer this land, and I want you to save me and my family. So they make a deal with her. What's the deal? The deal is that she has to hang a red thread. I see you smiling. A red bindle. You have to hang a red thread out the window. And that red thread is going to be the sign. And that's really interesting, because she must have heard about that too. Because there was terrible destruction that came across the Egyptians. But some people were saved. And what mark did they have on their homes to identify them as being saved? There was the red mark on the doors, on the door frames, right? The door posts and the lintel, right? So she says, I want you to hang. Right, this is what the guys say. That, you know, here's the sign. Etikvat chut hashani hazeh tikshri b'chalon. You should tie this red string to your window. Asher haradetenu vo. And then, anybody who's in the house is going to be saved. Ve'et avich ve'et imech ve'et achayich ve'et kol be'et avich tasfi elayich habayta. Vaya kol asher yetzei midaltein ve'etech achutza. Anybody who leaves the house, damo barasho. They're taking their life in their hand. Which is exactly what happens in Mitzrayim. V'lachu min adam v'natnu al shtei ha'mezuzot v'al ha'mashkof v'al ha'batim asher yochlu oto bahem. V'aya adam lachem la'ot al ha'batim. The blood will be the sign, and the negev won't come to you. And if you leave the house, you take your life in your own hands. This is a replay of what happened in Mitzrayim. It's unbelievable. So this comic story about these two hapless spies turns out that between the lines of comedy, there is a reenactment over here of the story of Yitziat Mitzrayim in one form or another. The language, the images, are all the images of Yetziat Mitzrayim. If you go a little bit further, we find more. Okay, the next perek, actually the next few prakim, perek Gimel, perek Dalid, begin to describe the crossing of the Jordan. Well, crossing the Jordan, we know where it happened. Right? They cross by what's called, today it's called Gesher Adam. There's a bridge there. It's one of the bridges to cross from Israel into Jordan. That bridge has a natural bridge. It's been there for thousands of years. It's not a complete bridge. It doesn't, right? But there's a natural place to ford the river that makes it much easier. That's where Yaakov crossed coming back from Haran when he came home. That's where Avraham crossed. Okay, when he ended up at Shechem, because you cross over the river there and you follow the stream Nachal Tirzah up to Shechem. That's been there, and it's described in Sefer Yoshua. Also, they crossed over there at Adam. Okay, that's the place. So now I ask you a question: if there's a natural bridge, why do you need to stop up the river so that it shouldn't flow? To make the land dry. Yeah, God doesn't make miracles unless he has to. But he did it in this case. And yet there seems to be something there of a reenactment of Kriyat Yam Suf. And then you go a little bit further, and there's a strange ceremony that takes place, or a procedure. I'm not sure what to call it, a ceremony or not, as they cross the river. Okay, it involves a number of elements to it that we've seen beforehand, and some new elements as well. So, for example, if you're on page 2 at the top of the page, Vayikra Yoshua el shneim ha'asar ha'ish asher hechin mibnei Yisrael ish echad mishavet. That phrase, ish echad mishavet, appears in Sefer B'Midbar Sinai. That's the language that's used to describe who Moshe is going to send to check out the land. Ish echad l'matei avotav. One person, it's the same exact language. Then he tells them, when you go into the Jordan, okay, so now the river is going to be dry, and I want you to take 12 stones. Each one of you take one stone, take them out of the river, okay? And then you're going to place them on the dry land. And why do I want you to do that? Continues in the next section right underneath it. L'man tihiyeh zot ot bekir bechem. This should be a sign for all future generations. Ki ish'alun b'neichem machar lemor. When your children ask tomorrow and say, Maha avanim ha'ela lachem, what are these stones for you? Does that sound familiar at all? Kish alcha bincha machar lemor. In 2 weeks from now, we're going to be saying this, right? Kish alun b'nechem machar lemor. Ma ha'avudah hazot lachem. Right? Ma ha'avanim ha'ela lachem. It's the same language, right? And then you're going, v'amartem. So you should say to them, right? And that, right? It's the same thing. V'amartem zevach pesach. And here, v'amartem lehem asher nichretu meimei hayarden yipnei aron b'it Hashem. Right? This is the sign that the water split when we cross through. V'ayu avanim ha'ele lizikaron nivnei Yisrael ad olam. They should be a zikaron. And in that same section back in Sefer Shemot, it should be a zikaron bein einecha. Now, it turns out there's another thing that parallels this, which I didn't actually bring here, but it's significant as well, because back in Sefer Shemot, you also have 12 stones. Sefer Shemot, you have 12 stones. Okay, so I'm not talking about the Kohen Gadol's outfit. I'm talking about 12 stones. Perek Kav Dalid of Sefer Shemot, after the events at Har Sinai, and after at the very end of Parashat Mishpatim, Moshe conducts this really interesting ceremony. It's a covenantal ceremony in which he has a mizbeach representing God and 12 stones. V'shneimasar shivtei Yisrael. And now we have 12 stones, once again, representing, obviously, you know, there's one person from each shevet who's taking one of those stones that may have been replayed afterwards in the choshen of a Kohen Gadol, right? But we've got the 12 stones, and the 12 stones, we have the Zikaron and the Zikaron, Vayaki Shalcha Bincha Machar Lemor, right? Va'amartem, and the explanation. There's something interesting going on over here where it's clear that the opening of Sefer Yoshua, we saw Perek Beit, we saw Perek Gimel, we saw Perek Dalid, and then after they cross, okay, you get to Perek Vav, and what do they do? Brit Milah, and Korban Pesach. They're replaying all the events from the beginning of Yitziat Mitzrayim, right? From that night, from the Pesach, all the way through Kriyat Yam Suf, and a little bit afterwards as well. And the question is, what's going on, or why is Sefer Yoshua doing this? So here I'd like to suggest that beginning of Sefer Yoshua is dealing with a problem, and it's a very profound problem. It's a theological challenge. It's actually, I would say, a theological crisis. And here's the crisis. And there are a lot of different ways of saying this. I'm just going to read from the Chumash. Here's Hashem's first communication with Moshe. Va'irei lahatzilo miyad Mitzrayim ulha'aloto min ha'aretz ahi el eretz tova urchava. I'm coming to take Bnei Yisrael out of Mitzrayim and to bring them to the good land. Eretz zavat chalav udvash. The plan is to go from Mitzrayim into the land. Hashem's second communication to Moshe is the same thing. Plan is to go from Mitzrayim back into the land. That's a fulfillment of the promise that Hashem made to Avraham in Brit Bin Habatarim. Right? After 400 years. How does he say it there? Yadoa tedaki geya zaracha be'eretz lo lahem v'avadum v'inu otam arba miot shana. And then, v'achrei chen yesu b'chush gadol v'dor rivi'i yashuvu hena. They're coming back here. But guess what? Didn't happen. They left Mitzrayim, and the people who left Mitzrayim never made it into Eretz Yisrael. Now, you can give a lot of reasons or explanations for it. You know, we all know, we've all learned the Chumash, but there's a serious theological problem over here. How do you bridge that gap? What do you do with those 40 years? I think that's the crisis that Yoshua is trying to address. Not Yoshua the person, but Yoshua the book. Sefer Yoshua is trying to figure out, what do we do about those 40 years? So here's the image that Sefer Yoshua tries to present. You left Mitzrayim and you came straight here. That's what Sefer Yoshua is trying to present. It starts with Rachav. Rachav's words, let's go back to them for a minute. Rachav's words on the first page in the third section. Kishamanu, look what she does, it's amazing. Kishamanu et asher hovish Hashem et meyam suf mipnechem. We heard how Hashem had dried up the waters of Yam Suf, b'tzeitchem Mitzrayim, when you left Mitzrayim, va'asher, and it, without taking a breath. In the same pasuk, va'asher asitem lishnei malchei ha'emori asher be'ever ha'yardein, and what you did to the two Emori kings on the eastern banks of the Jordan, Sichon and Og. Like Rahav says, we never forgot. No. Sichon and Og was 2 months earlier. 6 weeks earlier. So look what she does. She makes that bridge. 40 years earlier, 6 weeks earlier, it's all the same thing. There's one continuum. You left Mitzrayim, you're coming into Eretz Yisrael. Rachav is the one who does that first. That's amazing. And that's the way Sefer Yehoshua chooses to record what Rachav does. Because she says, for us, there has been no change. There's been no change. We're going to come back to this in a few minutes. Reenact Mitzrayim, reenact the images that happened in Mitzrayim. You had a Korban Pesach there. Well, it wasn't really a Korban. It was a proto-Korban or a pseudo-Korban. Right? There was no Mizbeach. But you had your Pesach there. You have a Pesach here. You had a night of destruction, of total destruction. You were saved by a red mark on the house. And there's going to be a night of terrible destruction and saved by a red mark on the house. Like, there's no break. This is the direct continuity. You had 12 stones. You made a brit with God. And yes, and we have a brit with God. And we have 12 stones. You made a zikaron. Yeah, it was just like yesterday. The beginning of Sefer Yehoshua, one of the key things that Sefer Yehoshua is struggling with is how do we bridge that gap? And the first six prakim of Sefer Yehoshua are designed to bridge that gap. How do we do that? Now, the gap is significant. Yeah, so the text can do nice little tricks like this. But I think that that when we take a look at one other piece, the picture becomes a lot fuller as to what the nature of the gap was and why it was so important. If you take a look on page 2, so at the bottom of page 2, there's a map. And this is a map of Be'erech, of the travels of Bnei Yisrael through the desert. Okay? You see where the beginning line of that arrow is? The beginning line of that arrow is approximately where Kadesh is. Today, if we had to identify it, probably somewhere near where Ben-Gurion is buried. Kadesh. Okay? Nachal Tzin. Nachal Tzin is... You go to Stay Boker, and you go to the edge of the kibbutz, and you're standing over Nachal Tzin. Nachal Tzin was probably the boundary, the southern boundary of Eretz Yisrael. Okay? And they started there, and they actually tried going to Eretz Yisrael from there, directly. Right? You're beginning that arrow, so all you have to do is cross the stream, and you're already in Eretz Yisrael. For some bizarre reason, Hashem takes them on a very strange path. They try first going directly in. And you see this little thing marked A, right? They try going directly in there, and they can't. They're rebuffed. So they got to go around, okay? Because Seir doesn't let them come through. So they got to go around, and they go all the way down to Eilat. This is a long trip. And from Eilat, they cross over onto the Jordanian side. They have to go around Edom. They can't go through Edom. He won't give them permission. They have to go around Moab. He doesn't give them permission. They have to go around Ammon. He doesn't give them permission. And in the process of going around Ammon, they come very close to Sichon Melech Amori, because Sichon Melech Amori had actually taken half of the land of Ammon. And now he doesn't let them go. And for the first time, Hashem says, okay, you're allowed to fight. Go fight Sichon. You want to hear the language? Here's the language Hashem uses. This is actually in Sefer Devarim. It's pretty amazing. It's actually Moshe's language. But it's pretty incredible. V'lo avas, this is Dvarim Perek Beit, toward the end of Perek Beit. V'lo ava Sichon melech cheshbon ha'avirinu bo. Sichon didn't let us go. Why? Listen to the language. Ki hiksha Hashem Elokecha et rucho v'imeitz et levavo. Because Hashem toughened his heart and strengthened his will. What's that? It's Paro. Look at this. So Moshe Rabbeinu, before Rachav comes into the picture, Moshe Rabbeinu understands that Sichon is the new Paro. And that just like Hashem hardened Paro's heart, or stiffened Paro's heart is probably more accurate, stiffened Paro's heart in order to demonstrate a point, he stiffened Sichon's heart exactly the same way. Sichon is the new Paro, right? In order to make an important point. So the stiffening of Sichon's heart brings us right back to Mitzrayim. We're erasing the 40 years. That process actually started before Yehoshua, right? In order to be able to conquer Sichon. So Sichon comes to battle. Og joins in the battle. They get destroyed, and Bnei Yisrael end up capturing the eastern side of the Jordan River. I ask you a simple... Perek Beit, in Sefer Devarim, Pasuk Lamed. Okay? So I ask you a simple question. They were in Kadesh. They tried going in once from Kadesh, and that wasn't so successful. Now, that's the story that caused the 40 years in the first place. So, 40 years later, why did Hashem not just say, okay, let's try again? Why can't they just go from Kadesh? Why do they have to go on this long, torturous route? And it's a very torturous route. It's so torturous that Bnei Yisrael asked the same question. You take a look at Parashat Chukat. So Parashat Chukat describes Bnei Yisrael's reaction to having to go through this. Parashat Chukat is the 40th year. Up until Chukat is all in the first and the second year in the desert. But they go through this torturous route, and then we have a number of stories, including the death of Miriam, including an attack by HaKena'ani Melech Arad, and including, this is in Sefer Bamidbar Sinai, Perek Kaf Aleph, Vayis'u Mehor Hahar Derech Yam Suf Lizbovet Eretz Edom, right? So they went from Hor Hahar. They went Derech Yam Suf, meaning they went down to Eilat, and they went to circumnavigate Eretz Edom. Vatik Tzar Nefesh Ha'am Badarech. They were tired of traveling, and I understand why they're tired of traveling, because they were so close to Eretz Yisrael, and they're traveling in the opposite direction. This is crazy. Vayidaber ha'am be'Elohim uv'Moshe. The people spoke out against God and against Moshe. Lama ha'elitunim mitzrayim lamut b'midbar. Which makes perfect sense. If you're trying to take us into Eretz Yisrael, it's there. Why are you taking me derech China? They're going all the way around. So we understand why. This was a big problem. So why does Hashem do this? Turns out, we have this map over here, right? And I have arrows on there. It turns out that there's another trek that takes place in the Chumash that follows almost exactly the same path, but in reverse. It's one of those things that people don't look at carefully because they think it's just, that's the boring stuff. Sefer Bereishit. The text is garbled right next to that picture, right next to the map. This is the story of the battle of the four kings against the five kings, right? The four kings from the area of Bavel coming to fight against the five kings of the area of Sodom. The background behind this is actually fairly simple. Okay, the world was divided into three regions. In those days, this is before the destruction of Sodom, so the world was basically divided into three regions, each one of them marked by a major river. You have the region of Bavel, right? You've got the Nile and Euphrates. You have the region of the Nile, Egypt, and those are the two major superpowers in the world. And there's another major river. We don't think of it today as a major river, but the Jordan was a major river. Before Sodom, before Yam HaMelech became Yam HaMelech, it was called Emek HaSidim, the Valley of the Fields. It's described as Kegan Hashem Ke'eretz Mitzrayim. It was as lush and as fertile as Egypt. And what you have described in the Chumash is that the four kings from Bavel basically came and invaded, because we have three major sources of economic wealth in the world, right? River means economic wealth, food, right? You have two major sources, three major sources. The people from Bavel came and tried to establish control over another one of those. They tried to take them over. So they came, right? And so we have the whole thing. They came and they beat them at first. They went back. And then after 13 years or after 12 years, the Melech Sodom rebelled. And then in the 14th year, the four kings come down. And we have a description of the path of the four kings. Uva Arba Asrei Shana, that's on your page right next to the map. Uva Arba Asrei Shana, Ba Kedor LaOmer VaHamalachim Asher Ito. 14th year, Kedor LaOmer and the kings who came with him, they arrived. Vayakut Rifaim Ba'ashterot Karnaim. Okay? The Rifaim Ashterot Karnaim are in the same place as it says Og on your map. And we know that from Sefer Dvarim, Perek Beit. All these places are identified in Sefer Dvarim. Rifaim and Ashterot Karnaim. And then they came down to the Zuzim in Ham. Ham, the Zuzim, is approximately where it says Sichon on your map. Ve'et ha'imim b'shavei Kiryataim. Shavei Kiryataim, approximately where you have the N of Ammon. They're taking this route going downwards. Ve'et ha'chori b'hararam Seir. Ah, the chori who lived in Seir. Well, you go down and that's Edom. Seir and Edom merged. It's the same place. They're taking this route and they're coming down. And then, Vayashuvu. And then all the way down to El Paran Asher al Hamidbar, which basically takes them all the way down to Eilat. And then they swing around. Vayashuvu Vayavo El Ein Mishpat Hi Kadesh. Hey, Kadesh, which is exactly where Bnei Yisrael started their trek, where these four kings nearly ended their trek. And finally, Vayaku et kol sedei ha'amaleki, which is around Kadesh. And finally, v'gam et ha'emori, they ended up, the emori ha'yoshev b'chatzatzon tamar, which is Ein Gedi. Okay, so right on the western bank of Yam HaMelech. They followed basically the same trek, but in reverse. Okay, that's cool, but so what? That's the what, but so what? Turns out that the four kings, when they came to battle against Sodom and the five kings of Sodom, they were not interested in destroying Sodom. They could have gotten to Sodom much quicker. You know, come down past Sichon, you cross right there at Sichon, you could have crossed over the Adam crossing. Right there. You come across right there. Geshar Adam. You come across there, and then you go straight down, and you attack Sodom. That would have been much more efficient. These guys took a crazy route in order to come to Sodom. I mean, when you want to go to battle, you don't necessarily want to engage in lots and lots of unnecessary battles and tire out your soldiers. Especially since these nations they fought against, the Rephaim, the Zuzim, and the Emim, they were known as the most powerful nations in the region. So why engage in all these unnecessary battles? Because they didn't want to fight Sodom. Fight them means you kill them. And that doesn't do them any good. They want to control Sodom, but not destroy it. They want Sodom to pay them tribute. You have a breadbasket over here. It's one of the three major centers in the world. If the people of Sodom have to pay them tribute, then they become wealthier and then they can invest their energies in doing all sorts of other things. They become a powerful empire, control two of the three sources of food in the world as they knew it. They don't want to fight against Sodom. They want to frighten them. So what do? They go to the Rephaim. Rephaim are a nation of giants. All of this is in Devarim Perek Beit. They go to the Rephaim and they defeat Rephaim. They go to the Zuzim and they defeat the Zuzim. The Zuzim were also a nation of giants. They go to the Amim. Amim means the terrifying ones. Everybody was scared of these three nations. What they're doing is they are engaging in a battle over here to terrorize the people of Sodom, to force them to submit and to go back to paying tribute. They don't want to take anybody captive. They don't take anybody hostage. They don't want to rid the cities of their people. They want Sodom to give in. It doesn't work. But that was their plan. And that's why they engaged in all these battles, because these battles were not unnecessary. They were what they needed in order to accomplish their goal. Turns out that generations later, Bnei Yisrael have the same problem. Hashem wants to bring them into Eretz Yisrael. Coming out of Mitzrayim, the plan is very simple. Make the sea split. Show a great sign of power. Everybody in Eretz Canaan is going to hear about what Hashem did to Egypt. Everybody in Eretz Canaan is going to hear about what Hashem did at Yam Suf, exactly as Rachav describes. And what's going to happen to all the Canaanim? They're going to flee. Nobody is going to want to attack them. Nobody's going to want to fight. That's what it says. And Hashem says, you know, I'm going to send the Tzir'ah, whatever the Tzir'ah happens to mean. It's something, Hashem says, it's going to make them run away. The ideal of the conquest of Eretz Yisrael was to be a non-bloody conquest. As you come, they're going to leave. That was Hashem's ideal with Yitziat Mitzrayim. And that's what Moshe and Bnei Yisrael recognized there at Yam Suf. Tipol aleihem eimata v'afachad. Bigdol zra'acha yidmu ka'aven. Namogu kol yoshvei kena'an. They're going to melt in fear. They're going to run away. And then you have a bloodless conquest of the land. That was what Hashem had planned. But what happened? Bnei Yisrael came. And the story of Parashat Shlach. And they were terrified. The terror got turned around. There was somebody else who helped in the process. Amalek. Chazal talk about Amalek being the people who jumped into the burning hot bathtub to cool it off. That's exactly what Amalek accomplished. Because coming out of Mitzrayim, you had this fear factor that Bnei Yisrael carried with them. Amalek didn't actually change the way the Canaanim looked at Bnei Yisrael. But they did change the way Bnei Yisrael looked at Bnei Yisrael. V'anhi ve'einenu kachagavim. In our own eyes, we were grasshoppers. Problem wasn't the Canaanim, the problem was their own self-image. They didn't think they could do it. What Hashem needs to do, as they're preparing to enter the land, he needs to reinforce that sense of invincibility for Bnei Yisrael. For Canaanim, we hear from Rachav, we hear how the Canaanim viewed this. The Canaanim saw no break. For them, Yitziat Mitzrayim and everything, and Knisa La'aretz, those who left Mitzrayim and the entry into Eretz Yisrael, was one smooth continuum. They did not see the discontinuum, but Bnei Yisrael did. They're wandering for 40 years. They're powerless. They're dependent completely upon God. But they're also transforming in the process. And what does Hashem do in the 40th year? He takes them on this long, circuitous route. And ultimately, that leads to the conquest of Sihon and Og, the two giants, the two most powerful nations in the area, the ones that everybody was afraid of. And that's what Rahab sees. That's what people in Jericho see. That's what the rest of the people of Canaan see. They see a nation that has left Mitzrayim, decimated Mitzrayim, crossed the sea, and now they've started their conquest of Eretz Yisrael, and they've destroyed the most powerful kings in the region. That's the story of Balak. Vayar Balak ben Tzippor, et akesher kol asa Yisrael la'emori. Balak melech Moav, he sees what Bnei Yisrael did to the Emori. Vayagor Moav mipnei ha'am ha'od. And Moav was terrified. Canaanim were terrified. Moav was terrified. And Bnei Yisrael were feeling great about themselves. We can do this. And that's what Hashem is trying to accomplish over here. Hashem taking them through the desert on this crazy route is designed to restore the confidence of Bnei Yisrael in themselves. So what do they have? They left Mitzrayim. They went across the water. They went across the water and came into Eretz Yisrael. There's a reenactment of the whole story of Yitzhak Mitzrayim in reverse. You have the crossing of the water. You have the Pesach. You've got the red marker on the house. All the things from Yitzhak Mitzrayim are repeated here in the 40th year. Not for the Kanaanim, but for Bnei Yisrael, for them to hear that. That's what the Meraglim that Yehoshua sends come back with. They bring back no strategic information about Jericho. That was their job. What do they come back with? Here's their report. The end of Perek Beit. Vayashuvu shnei ha'anashim vayirdu me'ahar. They come back. Vayomru el Yehoshua. Here's their report. They were supposed to check on all this stuff. Here's their report. Ki natan Hashem biyadenu et ha'aretz. Hashem gave us the land. This is the undoing of the problem with the Meraglim. The Meraglim came back with the report, we can't take it. We can't conquer that land. These guys come back with the report of, we can do it. It's not a problem. V'gam namogu kol yoshvei ha'aretz mipanenu. They are all terrified of us. It's a reversal of the report of the Meraglim. And that's the beginning of Sefer Yoshua. So when we come to our Seder this year and we think about Yitzhak Mitzrayim, so there was a problem. Because Yitzhak Mitzrayim was supposed to be followed by something else. But it's a problem that Hashem ultimately solved. And Sefer Yoshua is where he tells us how he solved it. Okay. I think I have a couple of minutes for some questions. Yeah. So when you... Now you read the rest of Sefer Yoshua and you discover how terrified they are. Because the conquest of everything... There are 31 kings that Yoshua ends up conquering. You know how many battles there were in conquering those 31 kings? 4. They were so scared that... And this connects to a whole different piece, but I'll sort of share it with you right now. When the Meraglim came back, right, what terrified them? Why did they think they couldn't conquer the land? There were two things. Giants and walls. Right, those are the two things they said. There were giants and there were walls. The giants we just took care of. Sihon and Og. Okay? You have the confidence. But how do you conquer walls? So conquering the walls happens in three phases in Sefer Yoshua. Hashem says, I'll do the first one. March around the city, the walls fall down. That purely divine. Second one, Hashem tells Yahushua, this is the I. Right? Hashem tells Yahushua, I'm going to teach you a strategy. How to conquer walls. And the second stage is you basically lay an ambush. You create a fake attack. You draw them out of the city. And then the ambush comes from behind and they finish the job. Don't go to a wall head on. You got to be smart. That's the I. There's a third stage, which most people don't realize, and that's the story of Giv'on. How do you conquer Giv'on? You convince the people that they need to surrender. That's exactly what happened. They surrendered on their own. And Giv'on is not just a walled city, but it's a walled city that sits right on the central roads, actually the crossroads between the North-South Highway and the East-West Highway. So when they take Giv'on with no battle, and that's a perfect example of what this is all about, they take Giv'on, they take the most strategic point in the land. And we can talk a lot about why it's so strategic, for a lot of different reasons. And then there's a coalition that is formed of the southern kings. And they all leave the comforts of their walled cities in order to come attack Giv'on. Because we got to defeat Yahushua and we got to defeat the Giv'onim up there. And what happens is, because they've left their homes, the battle now takes place on the open battlefield. Sefer Yahushua is about dealing with the ghosts in our own closet. Giants and walls. Hashem takes care of the giants, Sichon and Og. And then he teaches Yahushua how to take care of the other thing. He does the first wall, and he does all the others. The terror that you see in Canaan was the fact that they left the security of their walls. They said, we can't do this by ourselves. We have to band together. It was one battle that defeated an entire southern coalition. There's only one more battle in all of Sefer Yahushua, and that's to defeat a northern coalition. That's it. You would think that they're fighting all the time. It's four battles over the course of a period of 14 years. That's the whole thing, right? And all of that is because of the preparation that Hashem had them do. Chag Sameach.